I approach a lot of things where it's like, how much energy is this actually worth putting into? If you know what you're doing, you can do it 1,000 times quicker than someone who doesn't.
I go back to that, okay, I have a degree in this, but I still can't get it in my head that I am good enough.
But self-doubt's not always bad.
I think it's human.
It's definitely human.
Like, we all have it to some extent.
It'd be worrying to be so confident that you didn't doubt anything that you did. If every time I, as a copywriter, wrote a paragraph, I thought, that's amazing, next. I wouldn't be self-editing, I wouldn't be perfecting exactly what I was doing. Welcome to Well, You're the Designer, the podcast that delves into the minds, lifestyles and desk drawers of professional graphic designers to reveal their inner workings. We explore what fuels their creativity, what sends shivers down their spines and what it truly means to navigate the design profession today. Joining me today are two remarkable designers plucked from the Solar Press talent pool. Richard Kemp, a seasoned veteran of the design battlefield, who boasts a wealth of experience having tackled client briefs at Solar Press longer than anyone else.
All of the above.
Uh-huh. And next to him, we have Elise Collins, who recently joined us after, rejoined us indeed, after working on the agency side of things for a while. With a host of academic accolades trailing behind her, Elise brings a blend of expertise and intellect, seemingly weaving theory into practice every day of the working week.
Oh, thanks.
That's all right.
It's lovely.
My name's Danny Powell, and I'm not a graphic designer. As someone who's worked alongside graphic designers for many years, I've learned how to communicate with them using speech, hand gestures, and sometimes email, learning much about their rituals, behaviours, and migratory habits. I'm here to guide the cascading torrents of their creative flow into the calm reservoir of comprehensibility for the listeners at home. This week, we're going to be talking about imposter syndrome, what it is, how it affects us, and what we can do about it. So, panel, illustrious guests, is it something that you've felt, experienced at all?
I mean, yeah, definitely.
Every day of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel it every day?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Every single day.
There's always something where you think.
That's just, I think it's just ingrained in my brain. It is just me.
Well, that's 100% of us, because I do as well. So, I mean, would we conclude that that's pretty much everyone? Would you have to be
apparently
a little bit
not. I was chatting to Joanna about it last night. And from her research, sources suggest that it's actually some people just, they just never suffer from it.
I wonder if it's just a creative thing. If you're a creative mind, you're more, have that conceptual way of thinking. So you do really deep hone in on things. So I don't know, or is it just your upbringing?
And the work itself can be subjectively judged. Like, I mean, if I got in a bit of trouble and a paramedic with imposter syndrome turned up, I'd be like a bit worried about that.
True.
Because you can't interpret, you know, oh, well, he saved his life, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas
yeah,
what we do is like...
Yeah, you're either a good paramedic or not, right?
Yeah.
But then with services, you have to have that mindset that you can just switch on and switch off. Whereas us, we're more like, it could be this and it could be that. So it's a bit of...
So would you say it's a little bit about, because you can... So if you're answering a brief and you could answer it like this and you could answer it like that, sometimes with imposter syndrome, you feel like you can't decide which one is the best.
Yeah, I think that is, definitely.
But you get no comfort from both of them being valid, so therefore you must be all right because you come up with two suitable ideas.
Oh, it's hard though, isn't it?
Because it is hard. Yeah. Because
whatever you do, I think it's a perfectionism, isn't it, ultimately? It's how it's your personality, so.
Because I tend to go through, I guess, like waves of it. So there'll be moments where I go, oh, actually, I do know what I'm talking about and I can do this, right? Yeah. I'm happy, like, you know, I'm not mega or anything like that, but I, you know, yeah, sure, I've been doing this for a long time. It's almost impossible to do something for that long and still be really bad at it. So I can... I can take that as a starting point, like a foundation, right? Yeah. And I go, well, and I think actually, you know, I am all right. Mm-hmm. And then, but it can be knocked really easily. So then I'll maybe look at some like agency's work, yeah, and go like, oh my God, I know nothing.
Yeah,
you know, because it's so finished and so slick. And I never take into account that it's not just one person, it's a whole team. It's a whole team with massive resources and they can draw the best talent because of who they are. And everyone working there is at the top of their game, yeah? So obviously it should be better, right? It's like, I guess, if you've got an average road car and then you see a racing car and you go, oh, what, that racing car is faster than mine. Or sometimes if I'm out on my mountain bike riding along the road and a roadie comes past me and they go like, and I go, God, like, I must be rubbish, they're going well fast. And then I think, well, actually, they should be going fast. They've got a speed-specific bike. They're 20 years younger than you, and they're obviously very serious about their fitness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in some ways it's fine to...
Yeah, I suppose.
See things that are beyond what you could produce at that moment with your resources and time available, right? And go, well, it should be better. If it's not, they're in trouble. But it doesn't make you bad, right?
No, I agree. I think for me, I go back to that, okay, I have a degree in this, but I still can't get it in my head that I am good enough.
So despite you having a...
Yeah.
Because I always thought if I had a bit of paper, it would eradicate it.
Yeah, so did I.
Because I'm like now, self-taught, so I've had no real legitimate validation.
In writing.
It's just the fact that no one's, you know, punched me for it yet, I guess.
Being self-taught, is that not more... Like, you've done that yourself. You've grafted and...
Neither of those things makes you immune to it, does it?
It just happens,
doesn't it? It does just happen. But I think for me, it mostly happens when either I look down, so to speak, and go like, oh, bloody hell. Kind of, I feel like I'm on a bit of a wonky bridge that I've made. And I'm like, man, it's like a long way down and I'm right in the middle. So even if I turn round, it's still just as risky as going forward. So I kind of keep going forward. But self-doubt's not always bad, right?
I think it's human.
It's definitely human.
Like, we all have it to some extent.
Yeah, it'd be worrying to be so confident that you didn't doubt anything that you did, because that's a part of the critical faculty that we apply to our work.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to look at it. And, you know, if every time I, as a copywriter, wrote a paragraph, I thought, that's amazing, next. I wouldn't be self-editing. I wouldn't be perfecting what I was doing.
I suppose some people are very egotistical, like, yeah, whatever I do is the best.
But do you think they ever get anywhere?
I think they run the world, actually.
True.
Yeah, I guess. But do you think that's because of that attitude alone, or the fact of other advantages they may have?
I think I've met a few people in my time in agencies that have thought they're all that, and they
were.
It's subjective, but it's got them to where they are now, and they are at the top. So sometimes it's maybe you need that confidence mind to be like, I can do this. It's not going to bog me down. I'm going to get to the top, and it kind of sets you in that stead. Whereas when you've got imposter syndrome, it does kind of make you go in and go, I can't do this, and shy away from it. Because that's what I've
so
done.
For you, do you feel like you're incapable of doing it?
And I think, I think this is my job.
But despite all the evidence?
Yeah. And I think if you're
told it... So you've been headhunted twice, haven't you? You've worked at
two different
agencies.
Three. Well, including this one.
Yeah.
Coming back, Yeah.
And none of that is enough to convince you? Do you think you'll ever be convinced?
No, I really don't. I think that's why I strive for like all these reviews and getting good feedback, because they're the one bits I'm like, oh, I've done a good job. Like, I can do it. Maybe I can do this job.
So if your peers tell you they love your work until you've done a good job...
I don't do... Oh, it's hard, because when you and Emma are like, yeah, this is cool, I'm like... But then still, it lasts a couple of seconds. I'm like, what can I do better? Because I always want to be the best. I want to do the best work and produce the best.
Do you think that's possible?
No.
So you've doomed yourself to a life of unhappiness and frustration.
Yeah, ultimately.
Okay.
Yeah, I suppose I have.
Do you think there's, like, overall, do you think there is a way to resolve it or eradicate it? Or do you think if that's the kind of person you are, that's the kind of person you are?
I think what you said about sort of reflecting on your experience and achievements can help you. I think for when I get a creative briefing, that one of two things will happen. Either I'll go, yeah, I can see what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
or I think, oh, I can't immediately see what I'm going to do. And in the first instance, I'm happy, I crack on. In the second instance, I've got to dig deep and say, okay, well, I've done this thousands of times in the past. I know that if I work and work and work, I'll find something and it will be of a quality and it will work. So it is sort of a practice
thing.
Okay, so one of the things I tell, like, say, junior designers are a bit worried about, you know, because obviously you start with like a blank sheet and you've got all the content and you've got to put it together.
Mm.
And it can be a bit overwhelming because you're trying to imagine the finished product as is in your head onto the screen or page, whatever. So I always say, like, just trust the process, because there's a bit of a process, you know, you kind of break it down, you arrange it roughly into what panels are going in, and then you can start, and you just do it bit by bit, just keep everything black and white for now, don't get distracted by anything. Yeah, then start thinking about, you know, like your paragraph styles and that sort of thing, and slowly it will come together, and as we build momentum. So I always use that to fall back on and go, well, that's what I like about design. One of the things I like about design is the fact there are rules, right? And it's like a game. So you know what the rules are, you know what manoeuvres you can make. So as long as you pair them up correctly, which I can do, then it might not be what everyone thinks is the best, but it will be.
You will produce something.
I will produce something that shows that I know what I'm doing. So with copywriting, is it the same? Is there like a process that you can kind of just fall back on? And you know that as long as you take these steps by the end, it will either be perfectly serviceable to your normal standard, or it may well have prompted, like, you know, a couple of little sparks, a little bit of nice ideas where you put your little, you know, flourishes in there and a little, you know.
I've got a few tricks, like, I write down my bad ideas, like, because it just gets out of your head and stops you rethinking them all the time.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
If you think, oh, it'd be really easy to just do this as a horrible, cliched, seen it before thing, I would just write that. And then sometimes, just because it's my voice, it kind of turns out kind of all right and you can kind of tweak stuff. Yeah. Or you've put that to one side and you've got a fresh mind, fresh attitude to sort of start again with it.
I think we do the same.
Yeah.
Like, because we kind of... Well, I don't know, with the art board, like, we'll do a design, move it off the art board, take that, and then it's like constantly leaving all your bad ideas
around the edge because it does,
you will pick things from others that then you're like, oh, I can use that from earlier, and then it just kind of forms, isn't it?
Especially with like logos and stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's one of my favourite stages, is when you're on the, when you're starting to like vectorise some of the sketches and you've got like, you know, just loads, just things. It looks like someone dropped like a box of stamps or something, doesn't it?
Like,
yeah, but I just find that actually quite pleasing in a way. I feel like I'm actually, I don't know, like almost working with my hands, and I'm in a workshop or something. Yeah, there's stuff everywhere and all that. Yeah, I find it quite cool.
Yeah. What about really simple jobs? Because from my experience, that when I feel imposter syndrome most intensely is when I get something really, really easy to do. Like, we need a sign that says no smoking. We need a sign that says don't throw hand towels down the toilet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, why are they giving it to me? Yeah. Have I got to add something to this?
Yeah.
Has this got to be a work of genius? What do I do?
You overthink it.
Yeah.
Completely. And then it ends up taking longer than it even should.
The only reason it's on your desk is because someone's got to do it.
Yeah. And it falls and roughly in that category.
Yeah.
I think I've got better at that, and now I approach a lot of things where it's like, how much energy is this actually worth putting into?
Mm.
Yeah. And the reason, because even if it's really simple, you can, if you know what you're doing, you can do it 1,000 times quicker than someone who doesn't, just to get the same very simple result.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've had a lot, you know, in the past, we've had lots of customers and they've sent in their PowerPoint of a business card and it's just text on a business card. And they go, oh, I want something like this, but, you know, but tidied up. So you like, you do that and they go, oh, that's brilliant. You know, how long did that take you by? You know, someone going like, can I just ask how long that took you? I'll be like, oh, you know, it took me like 6 minutes or something. Mm. And they're like, you know, it took me 3 hours last night to put that, but then to do the same thing, you know. So you do take it for granted. And I think, like you say, that's probably when you think, right?
Because, yeah, and then that should reiterate to us, maybe we can do this.
Yeah, but you're saying it has the opposite effect on you, yeah? if you've got something simple.
Yeah, it does do my head in. That's probably my own personal stuff. But I think what you say about like reflecting on your experience, because a part of imposter syndrome is not appreciating your own talent, experience, innate ability.
Yeah.
And I think it becomes more difficult, like we talked about earlier, because what we do is creative and subjective. But also now what we do is being undermined a little bit by AI.
Yeah.
And the perception maybe in graphic design that the software that you use does it all for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and we live in the world of the C word.
Yeah.
Yes. At least the C word we use for Canva in this room.
that darndest thing. Yeah. Yes.
So I think that makes you become aware of like people's perception that what we've got is some kind of soft skill that anyone can just grab and do.
That's quite common though, isn't it? It's like people that use Canva, like, oh, it's so easy to do being a graphic designer.
But I guess photographers felt that as well when the iPhones first come out and everyone's going, oh, I'm a photographer.
Yeah.
And all the photographers are going like, man.
You don't know the composition. You don't know like...
Yeah, like lenses and depth of field and like all that stuff that actually goes into making. I know probably camera phones can take a lot of that into account now.
Yeah.
So that's probably quite undermining. But again, you can tell, can't you, when someone is a proper photographer.
Yeah.
It just, because it becomes a work of art rather than just a...
Yeah. But like you can tell...
Memory.
Someone that's designed something, someone that has designed something on Canva, because it's just... There's just a
mostly because the text is tiny. I don't know what Canva's got against legible text, but there you go.
But if you pay, isn't it like the saying, like pay cheap, pay twice?
Yeah. Buy cheap, pay twice.
That's the one. Yeah. So then, if you come straight to someone that knows what they're talking about.
But then they get you.
Then you're like,
I can't do this.
I can't do this.
So either of you, has it ever essentially like paralysed you?
Yeah.
Yeah, for like to the point where someone else had to do the work, or it just
to the point where I came out of design for a year, and you got me back into it.
Oh, really?
Because I was.
You were just so scared to do it again.
Yeah, I was in a toxic work environment, and I was told daily that it wasn't good enough, and I already didn't think I was good enough, and then I just believed it, and then I was like, I can't do my job anymore. So I just come out of it, did something completely different, and it wasn't until you went, you can do it, and I was like, maybe I can do it. And now I'm here. So I think, you start, it can eat you up, definitely. Yeah.
And I guess if you've already felt like that every time that you think, oh, maybe I'll do it again.
So what's the point?
Maybe not. I think not so much what's the point, but you've also got to think, well, right now, I'm in a position where I can almost exist in two states where I can be like, I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
But I can still have that little grain where I go, but maybe I was, right?
Yeah.
So it can, like the little pilot flame can stay alight, right? But it must be scary, because when you go, well, I'll listen to the pilot flame and then you go, okay, I'm going to try and do it.
You've got to have that motivation.
You know that if you get one knockback, it's going to blow that pilot flame out. So it's actually, I would say, it's pretty brave to then go, okay, I'll try it again.
Yeah, because, it took a lot.
Yeah.
But I think even in day-to-day, if something overwhelms you, like I'm sure we get some briefs that come in and we're like, oh, God, that's a bit daunting. Like I get them, and then it's the team around you now we've got, and it's like, no, we can do it. We do it together. We just tackle it. And it's changing that thought process so it's not, like you're on the roller coaster and you're just going to fly off. It's now like, no, we can do this. It's a nice cycle.
Okay.
We can all work together.
Yeah.
It's just changing
a bit
your
more
mindset.
Of a rhythm rather than thinking, being confronted with something.
Yeah, trying to cut that out and think differently.
Do you, either of you, get it in any other areas of your life? Like if you're hoovering, do you ever think, man, I'm terrible at hoovering?
I'm naff at this. I wish.
I don't know. Possibly DIY. But things I know, if I firmly am an imposter, I firmly know that there are trained tradespeople who can do this.
Yeah, that's not
times.
Really imposter syndrome. Yeah. That's terrible at DIY, right?
Well, it's me having an accurate grasp of the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm the same. There's things I'd tackle now as long as they're all based on right angles, really. that's my only thing.
Yeah,
I can deal with rectangles, essentially, and I can put sticks on them or not, and that's pretty much it. Or I can stick them to a wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can put a rectangle on a wall or make it stand up.
I don't think I've got it in any other area. I'm really trying to think.
Yeah, because you're like, I mean, I believe, I'm not saying I don't believe you
really
feel
like
all these things, but I think to meet you, you come across as pretty confident.
Really?
I would say so.
See, I think the people that are look confident are overcompensating.
You reckon?
Yeah. Because it hides. It's an alter ego, isn't it? So
even Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
The Rock, yeah.
You reckon?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's racked with insecurity.
Yeah, because inside he's a big jelly bean. Like, when he holds his babies and he's all like, ooh,
yeah,
daddy.
But that's having a softer side. That's different, not being your stage persona. But do you really think The Rock suffers from imposter syndrome?
Yeah, no. No, true.
Apart from, I'm not a real rock.
He looks at rocks.
Yeah, like, looks at rock. I've got nothing on those guys. Bloody granite.
I guess it's one thing having your own sort of personal paranoia about your abilities, but you spoke at least about like the environment that you're in. I mean, if you're in an environment that's a little bit antagonistic or not supportive of what you're trying to achieve, then that's sort of, you got it coming from the inside and the outside then, haven't you? It's no good. I mean, I've worked in good environments and bad environments,
and I think
you get better results in the good environments, because if you're somewhere that you don't feel as supportive and you've got something that makes you feel a little bit out of your depth, you're then scared to reach out for help. I've just got to try and
sort this. Yeah, this is all my fault, so I've got to do it myself, right?
Yeah. Whereas, I think kinder working environments are just more productive because you get people saying, well, what do you think of this? And without fear of judgment.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think because, for all of working life, until I suppose the last 10-15 years, the general way it's been seen is like, it's work, so why are you having a good time? So therefore, if you treat someone like that and people are always happy, it was kind of misconstrued as being, well, they can't be working because they're happy,
because they're having fun.
Yeah, but that's true though, right? Yeah. That's the whole old school mentality, isn't it?
But it's mad because like when you're at school and they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're like, oh, yeah, I want to be a graphic designer. And you're like, well, and then you get there and you want to enjoy it. It's your hobby. It's what you love. So, of course, you want to love your job because you spend more time. We probably spend more time with each other than we do with our families.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't feel imposter syndrome about the fact that I like thinking about stuff and coming up with ideas, and they're normally different from most other people. Say, like, you do the first five. I think my first five would be mostly different from a typical sample. So I'm comfortable. Like, I don't kind of ever doubt that.
If you have a very strong lateral way of thinking, but
what I do doubt is whether that's what the actual answer is. Do you know what I mean? It's all very well being like that, but if
have I answered the brief?
Yeah, but if 90% of people go, I really don't see the connection, I'm sure it's very clever or something, but I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but I haven't got that much time, move along, right? Whereas sometimes the more kind of like
literal
broad approach is more successful. So I think I tend to go, yeah, you might be like that, but it's really not appropriate, and everyone's going to find out in a minute that actually, yeah, although they sound great, when you deliver them, they're going to fall flat.
That's the thing.
So I think that's where I start to get like self-critical and start doubting myself.
It is that being found out.
And then I go, well, I can't even back it up and go, yeah, but I've got a degree because I've got nothing.
I've done 20 odd experience here. Like,
yeah, but I know,
that
but
long.
Yeah, but I've, this is going to sound really bad, right? But apart from a few occasions, like when I first started, there were some designers that were ahead of me in terms of their, like, what can I say, skill curve, right? So that was good, and I got to learn a lot from them. But then they moved on, and I didn't. And then the people that come in were behind me on the skill curve, right? So it's kind of like the best way to get better is to hang around and work with people better than you.
That's the whole point of
As the design, kind of the appetite for providing a quality design service at Solo Press wavered, then obviously there was less impetus to get in these, because they just, you know, like, maybe fair enough, they're a printing company more than anything, right? So they're just like, well, it doesn't matter. And I did try, you know, I went and worked in an agency, but I found it just, I did not have a good time either, right? And I found like, whoa, this is a bit weird and toxic, and, you know, like a bit like going and working for like Marcus Waring or something when he was like young and evil, not now he's old and happy on MasterChef, right?
Yeah.
And it's all like, you know, da da da, or like, what's the drummer film? Whiplash.
I love that film.
Right? It's all that kind of vibe. Yeah. And I'm just like, I thought, well, if I can just stick it out for 3 years, that's 3 years agency experience.
Yeah.
But not only could I not stick it out, I could not hide my disdain for the whole vibe anyway. So I ended up getting sacked within like a year and a half, if that.
Yeah.
And then I just like phoned up Solo. I was like, man, I need to pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
And like, because I was just almost pushed out the door. Just like, yeah, it's over. Yeah. Catch you later. Here's like 2 weeks gardening leave money.
Yeah.
So
that's really similar to an experience I had actually as well. But I mean, working at an agency where you're working billable hours and logging everything you do, If you stop and think about something for 5 minutes to try and get some ideas, then you just feel racked with guilt. Because,
God, yeah.
You know, if I just sort of sit back in my chair, twiddle my thumbs, try and think of a good idea, am I really working? That might be where I got the habit of just hammering down bad ideas. Just sitting there doing some work. Yeah.
I think with things like that, you have to make every hour accountable.
Yeah.
Like, I've been in that environment. Yeah. And it's like, well, what was you doing for those last hours?
Yeah.
I was thinking,
went for a walk to get an idea.
Yeah, like thinking's a legitimate part of that.
Yeah.
I think this is another maybe like kind of misapprehension. Is that the right word? Right? Where I think because you are, you know, in quotes, a creative and all that.
Yeah.
Then when people ask you about stuff, I think they assume you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, it just comes.
Because you just know, because you're a copywriter or because you're a graphic designer. If they go, oh, you know, I want a flyer to advertise XYZ, what do you think? What are you going to do? And it's just like, I know what I'm doing and everything, but I do need to think about it.
Yeah.
I think one of my worst skills is like figuring how long it'll take to do something. People are always asking me how long will it take to do that. I'm like, I don't know, it depends when I think up the answer.
I tend to like break it down into hours, like, cause when that's we're pricing, I go, how long do you think? I go, oh yeah, I don't know. I go, what, like an hour, more than an hour? And then just break it down, and if you can get down to half hours, even better. But hours I think are fine.
Yeah, we kind of set it as a challenge now, don't we?
Yeah.
Like, can we do that if we say an hour? Can we do it in half an hour?
Yeah, so I think that. And then do you think, so you were talking earlier about how when your peers give you praise, it's not enough to counteract.
No.
Yeah, or not as powerful as praise from a client, right?
I don't know. I think it is on a similar level. I think for a customer, it's different because they've come to us with a job.
Yeah.
They obviously couldn't do it themselves. That's why they've come to us. We've given it to them and they are over the moon and they've written a glowing review for us. Then it's like, wow, they're really grateful. Like, we've done that for them and they're happy. Whereas like the team, like, we're all on the same wavelength and we can all appreciate like, oh, that's really good design. So it's like, yeah. But I think for a customer, it might just be that little bit.
So flipping it.
Yeah.
If you've got bad feedback.
Oh.
Would you rather have it from a client or your peers?
I'd hate to let you and him down. I hate letting
Yeah, but, like, yeah, I know, but it wouldn't be like, say, don't think in terms of letting down, but say you put together a layout,
yeah? Yeah, but
And I go, I don't think this is quite hitting the spot. Then I think
that's subjective. You may not like it, but it works for me. So I think, okay.
Yeah.
No, we can't please everyone.
But if the client said exactly the same thing.
Then it'd hurt. I'd go home and cry. But then that's when you have to disassociate. That's what I've learned now, that, okay, this is my craft. This is what I do as a living. I get paid for it. It is my job. And then I used to think of it as an extension of me, my work. And I used to like put my heart and I do put my heart and soul into it, but I have to disassociate. Like, this is my work. If you don't like it, okay, we'll just change it. But I used to think, they've hurt me. They don't like my work. But now I have to cut ties with it. Like,
yeah, it's like a business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do that.
It is. It is really hard. Yeah.
You can't take criticism and praise, can you? Like,
if you've got to take both or none, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's you either take it to heart or you don't. I don't know. Mind you, I take criticism to heart, but not praise. I'm very uncomfortable receiving praise, but like criticism, all you know, when you wake up at 3 a.m. and it's there in your brain.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's natural. If it's just certain types
of
people.
Really. I know what you're saying, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm like that. But now I think about it, more due to probably bad memory than anything else, and general like. Dithering of like middle age, right? But I can't really remember any particularly bad feedback I've ever had.
Oh, really?
Not really. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. It definitely has happened.
But they just haven't stuck with
but it. It hasn't stuck like this far.
But in a way, that's nice though, isn't it? Yeah. What a lovely thing that you've had
pretty nice.
You can just like wash it off your back. Like.
The only one I can remember really is the like some chicken menu, you know, super chicken. Type menu.
Chicken cottage.
Yeah. Nice. That's it. Yeah.
Morley's.
Yeah. Oh, wish. I'd love to get my hands on Morley's.
So that's sort of negative criticism that can stay with you. What sort of situations does that stem from?
I think the ones that will bug me is when maybe they had a point. And I can see it in that from their point of view and go, oh, you know, actually... Maybe that should have been a brighter colour. Maybe they're right. Maybe I didn't understand their product or service well enough. And I kind of stuck to it on the, well, I'm a designer. But actually in hindsight. Best. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you have to meet in the middle at some point.
Yeah,
But we're right.
But, yeah, but not if they're that wrong. Come over here.
Yeah.
So I think it's that. If I can kind of see it. Or sometimes it's maybe something I think of 3 months after something's been printed. I go, oh man, I should have done that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I don't know whether that's the same, but it still annoys me and might stick with me that I didn't think of it in time.
I think that's good though with criticism from them, like trying to take a positive spin at it with if they're quite the way they word it. And then there's always a way of producing work with the amends for them and saying like, well, this is what you want, but we would suggest doing this.
Yeah.
Then it's giving them that choice, like what we think and what they wanted. And then it's kind of like meeting in the middle. So there's always a way around it.
And also I think when feedback's written down, you might be able to relate to this, right? You have to be careful about what voice you read it in, don't you?
Mm.
Yeah, because you can read it and you can put on a voice, can't you, Elise, right? And make them sound however you want them to sound.
Yeah.
Where they might be very... Because that's why I think sometimes it's mad because you get an email and you go, oh my God, they're absolutely livid and they're asking to call me and you're absolutely bricking it. And then you phone them up and they go, oh, hi. Oh, thanks for phoning. Sorry. And I thought it might be easier to go over here on the phone rather than through emails.
Yeah,
you know, how's your day? And they're just like, oh my God.
But certainly. I mean, I'm a copywriter by trade and still there are situations where I know that if I write something to someone, it's not going to come across. I need to either, you know, if it's internally, I need to go to their desk. If it's externally, I need to give them a ring.
Because
I had this one instance like a long, long time ago, sort of in my early 20s, in my first sort of mid-20s, early 20s, in my first marketing job, and I was working with an agency, and my company operated in the UK and Ireland, and every time they were like referred to Ireland, they talked about it as ERA,
right?
And that's not really a term that Irish people like to use. So I thought, well, I'll just sling them a quick email, say, oh, would you mind referring to it as Republic of Ireland, and I thought, oh, that's a bit rude because I've not explained myself. Can you please refer to Ireland as Republic of Ireland, not ERA, because this is not a a term that's welcomed. I thought, wow, that's not very... Oh, I've not explained myself here. But no, 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 not a term that's welcomed. Because during the period leading up to the Easter Rising, I sent them this big email, and the boss of the agency like rings up and goes, oh, I'm so, so, so sorry, and we've offended you and all this. I was like, and it was, obviously, it was a long time ago. I was very young and stupid. But I thought that I was really sort of putting them at their ease by giving them loads of written information, but
they were sort of mortified. Oh, no.
But you can do that, right? When you're writing, you kind of write yourself into a knot, and you just get all twisted up.
Yeah.
One thing I always go, okay, I'll just keep it brief and formal. I go, oh, that's too brief and too formal.
At least,
and then I'll try and casual it up a bit. I go, now I just sound like a now I sound like I don't care, or I'm not taking it seriously.
That's what emojis are for.
Exactly.
Well, I was going to say,
thumbs up.
Like, I know, like, it seems a bit daft, but actually,
it does.
You can see why emojis were invented, right? Yeah, yeah. Because they do actually serve a purpose. You can just put that in there, can't you?
Yeah.
Like, whack a smiley face in there, and everyone knows it's all cool, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can get like the weird passive aggressive emoji use, can't you? Well, even I think that's just aggressive, right? Yeah. But you know, you can, you know, the shrugging one, which I mentioned before, is the most. Oh man, it just riles me straight away.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. When people use it in that way, you know.
Yeah, I get more offended by a dot, just a full stop.
Really? What if there's no emoji? If you dot me,
I'm like, this is it.
See, I only use emojis when necessary. Oh, I like to use irrelevant emojis.
Well, like the aubergine?
No, more like, you know, the random ones, like the one of a graph and then maybe a tree, and a clown face.
Didn't even know there was a graph.
Yeah, there's loads.
See you next week, Taj Mahal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I guess they're not about imposter syndrome, are they?
Not much of this is, really, but yeah. So this feeling of imposter syndrome, where does it come from? What's the origins of it, do you think?
It's definitely in your upbringing.
What, 100%?
Well, I'd say so.
Well, I mean, I'd say it's a mixture, I guess, of, you know, people go, oh, is it nature or nurture? It's always both.
Yeah.
It's like, it has to be, right? Because you can get people that are brought up the same, but are very different.
Yeah.
So it can't just be one. But yeah, upbringing, definitely. Yeah. It's definitely a big part of it, isn't it?
How you, just as a parent, and how you are with your offspring.
Yeah.
Oh, so put it this way, I know my daughter, because we talk about it regularly, has imposter syndrome, so I know I've done something wrong.
Oh.
No, well,
by your book, you're telling me I'm a bad parent.
No.
To the nature side of things, though, I think being on guard and a bit nervous is probably evolutionarily really helpful, and so there's probably always going to be a seed of that. So
like a seed of doubt sort of thing, because otherwise.
But then nurture is about when the more people maybe the more people place their confidence in you, the more confidence you have in yourself.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And then if you're held in such a high regard by your parents, or if you're not, if you're overly criticised, I think. If you're either end of that spectrum.
Yeah, because I guess if you're overpraised, you're going to find out later that it was kind of not true.
Yeah, you was up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cliche thing people say about millennials, isn't it? That no one ever told them they were wrong until they went to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess you're a millennial, aren't you?
Well, so I'm 1996, so...
Yeah, but that's still...
Is that class as millennial?
You were born in 96.
Yeah, I'm not millennial.
I went to university in 96, God.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're...
Yeah, I think you're a millennial.
Yeah. Boom's a millennial.
I suppose that is right.
Yeah.
Because my parents were always like, yeah, you're the best. And then I got to work and they were like, you're shit.
Yeah, but in between you went to uni and they went, actually, you're very good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I read was, like, with that, is that you shouldn't praise the result, you should praise the effort.
Oh, okay.
So
that's such a good way.
When your child goes, oh, I've done this picture of a bus, rather than going, wow, that's the best picture of a bus I've ever seen, you're amazing at drawing buses, you go, like, it looks like, oh, you put so much effort into that. Yeah. Mm. I really like that you've, you know, yeah. cared about this, and like, that's the thing you want to encourage. It's about the effort, not the overall, not getting praise or, you know, so like if you kind of dish out, I guess, like physical punishment or something for misbehavior, you don't get good, well-behaved people, you get good liars.
Yeah.
Because their whole mission becomes
avoiding it.
And that, and you avoid things by lying about stuff. So it doesn't actually change behavior. Mm. It just turns people into liars, really.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So it is about, and again, kind of marries up a little bit with like trust the process, because it's the process that's that of whatever you do, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's always a process. And if you try and master that process, then the results will come, right? As long as you've got that little, even if you haven't, because some things you can just do by process, right? And it will be satisfactory at worst, maybe even a bit better. But I think with the creative stuff, then if you've got that, because I think your kind of background, like originally, like from a young age, was more about fine art and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was more conceptual minded than the actual design side of things. So, yeah, I suppose it was, and with fine art, it's very subjective.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to the Tate Modern with my family, and I could be like standing at something for like hours, like, wow, this is amazing. Because there's a story behind it, and I'm like, whoa. And then they're like, it's a blackboard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, like, okay. So it's just how you think of it, I suppose.
So I think if you add that, like that kind of, you know, almost awe for the visual appeal and the visual sense, and then you apply it to the craft of like design, then that's what makes you a good designer, Elise.
I'll take it's
really
that.
Interesting that you talk about the process, praising the process in terms of upbringing, trusting the process in terms of work. And then I think what was my coping mechanism, it's going to the process. So I think that there's something in that in terms of combating imposter syndrome.
Yeah, because you can say, oh, I doubt this about myself, but you can't doubt the process in a way, because that's what you're meant to do.
Yeah, because you can't panic because you haven't got the solution instantly.
That's another thing as well.
Like, I'm not at home. Well, no, I've got to get in the car and drive there.
There is, you know, and some things you think are going to be easy and end up not being. Yeah, you have a idea in your head straight away and you go, oh, this is going to be great. And then when you do it, you go, oh, that's not great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can either keep developing it until it gets great, or you can go, I guess that's another thing, isn't it? You can go, oh, okay. It's when to listen to it, because in some ways it can be like an aid, right? Because you're...
spurs you on.
Yeah, it spurs you on. Yeah, it can be motivational. I think there are, although a lot of people like really like suffer from it, I'd say, you know, way worse than me, maybe even worse than you, you know, and I know you like do have trouble like day to day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I think there is, even if you can't break free from it, and I guess you never really can, right? Yeah. You might as well try and turn it a bit and go, oh, okay, but that means I'm more prepared to adapt to change, perhaps, and I'm more prepared to listen to others, and I'm more prepared to kind of learn from others, learn from mistakes. I mean, where would you be without mistakes? We'd be nowhere.
Okay, so here's a question for both of you then. If I could click my fingers and eradicate any element of self-criticism, would you do it or would you keep it?
Oh, no, I'd keep it. I wouldn't have to think about it. You'd be nowhere without self-criticism.
Yeah, as much as it shapes me as a person, it makes me me.
Yeah.
So without that, I think it spurs me on to try harder, to be better.
To uphold certain standards, meet them.
And then, because I like overly caring enough, because that's me. So, I'd keep it.
Right.
If you had a fader, though, I'd definitely ask you to take it down.
Just
down
a notch.
Yeah. Take the edge off that.
Maybe to like a...
Yeah.
A comfortable 7.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, just, you know, a bit too much top end on that one.
So, are we... concluding, dare I say it, embrace your imposter syndrome, but just don't let it be the boss.
Don't let it be the boss. And in, I guess, in embrace what it says about you as a person, in that you are always wanting to learn, always wanting to get better, and you have a, I guess, realistic, think of it as, yeah, you know, you've got a foot, I mean, you've got a foot out of reality, because, you know, it can make, convince people they're not good at things they are good at. But there's, yeah, there's elements of it that should be embraced, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. I think it keeps you in good stead. And if you can use that as a positive, try and take a positive spin wherever you can in things like that. Because if it's going to bog you down every day of your life...
Because there's nothing wrong with caring, right?
No.
If everyone cared as much as everyone with imposter syndrome, maybe the world would be a better place.
I think that's a wonderful sentiment.
I don't know whether we should start the Industrial Revolution, actually. Now I think of it, it's a terrible idea of mine.
Well, I think that's a good sentiment and a good place to maybe round things up for today. I think that's all we have time for anyway. So I hope we've brought some clarity and insight into imposter syndrome for you, and especially about how it affects designers and creatives in general. If you'd like to share some of your own experiences or bring up something that you think we might have missed, please feel free to leave a comment via this Solar Press YouTube channel, your streaming platform, or any of our social media channels, and we'll leave all the details in the comments or in the
description.
We'll leave all our details in the description below. And we'd love to hear what you think of the podcast anyway, so don't be shy. And please like and subscribe if you enjoy what you've heard today. This has been a Solar Press podcast brought to you by Poppy Productions. Thank you very much, and see you next time.